Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show.
Today's guest is David Blackwood, previously Global CTO for Infrastructure at Capgemini. So yeah, I mean, thanks for doing this. As we said earlier, like saying we were just talking there before we got the recording started about Amazon and as being kind of one of the, well, I mean, for me, the most impressive company at the moment. I think there's probably not too many people who necessarily disagree with that. And you look at kind of the automation side as well. I mean, it's just fascinating. That whole idea of automation for me as kind of a layman is particularly interesting because there's so many tasks throughout the day that I'd love to automate. And, you know, just like inconveniences that I'd love to automate for myself. And we're kind of there now. And the scale that you can automate now is just fascinating, isn't it? And you know, I find it interesting, but at the same time, I just want to automate the Internet of Things. I want my house to be sorted. I want my shopping to be done for me. If I need a new T-shirt or some new underwear, I want it to just get sorted for me. And we're not that far away, are we, David?
No, we're not. I mean, it's a really good point that about automation. And I think it's the usual thing. If you ask six people what they think automation means to them, you're going to get six different answers. And I think there's a automation taking place at the consumer level, the enterprise level. But I think, you know, when you look back in the, you know, why is it all taking place right now? You know, there's a real acceleration of new and emerging tech. Particularly over the last 10 years, things like iPhone is only 10 years old now, which is quite staggering when you look at what's been achieved in technology since then. But the kind of things that interest me and have interested me over the last few years is if you look back a little bit in history, and the area that really interests me most is about smart cities and how we as individuals will use the technology in these smart cities, whether we're a citizen, an employee, an employer, whatever. But you look over history and you see that, you know, it's only about, I think it was 1900, that the population in cities, I think, was somewhere just under 15%. And then you fast forward that now, and I think it was the year 2008, I remember reading this, that over 50% of the planet's population now reside in cities. So we've had a major migration, if you like, to cities. And the way, if you just take that projection forward, they reckon that by something like 2050, roughly 75% of the population of the planet will be living in cities. So if you then step back and say, well, we're going to have to do something to make these cities smart, intelligent, joined up, connected. And I think that's why it's really interested me in terms of, you know, how does the technology, how is that going to play its part and how can we accelerate it? But at the same time, make it secure, safe, ethically and legally acceptable for everyone.
It's weird, isn't it? Do you not think it is kind of a strange concept that, because all I think about when I think that we're all going to live in a city, or 75% of people are going to live in a city, is kind of, isn't that kind of defeat the purpose? My thoughts when I was thinking about technology. So A couple of things, really, I suppose. One, I was involved in the Hyperloop project. I don't know if you've ever heard of that project. It was an Elon Musk white paper, but it's this a train that's essentially faster than an aeroplane. So obviously, if you can make that efficient, the things that you could do, the places you could live and commute to work, like it would completely change the dynamics. And you know, I suppose it's trying to, it's an advanced version of what the HS2 is attempting to do, which, you know, whatever you think about that project, I think it's a waste of time, but that's another story. I think it is interesting on that side of things. But technology for me was be made so it's more adaptive. You can kind of live where you want. The idea of remote working was particularly compelling. So why do you think that is still a thing where we feel the need to, not only now that technology allows us to do these things, go the complete opposite and create cities? Is it that we're like migrating closer towards the cities, or is it just that like more of the land mass is actually just becoming a city or a metropolitan or whatever you want to call it? I mean, because it doesn't, I mean, it defeats the purpose for me. I like fresh air and outdoors, and if I didn't have to live, if I didn't have to live near commerce, I wouldn't live there. But I kind of have to because I still have to come into the office and do this and that. But like the beauty about technology is that like surely it's disrupting some of those trends. So I you know, I still, you know, you've worked with, you know, God knows how many businesses over the years. Why is that still kind of the way, and why is that still the pull to kind of bring us all to these kind of condensed cities where we're all on top of each other and the prices are extortionate? Like, what's the surely technology could act as an advocate against that?
And I think that's a good point. I mean, when you look at in the press, I mean, someone like Elon Musk against Zuckerberg in terms of fit from Facebook, they're kind of really almost the opposites, polar opposites in terms of things like AI, robots, automation. That's not to say that they don't want improvements in technology, but I think in terms of the views where robots are going to be taking us, so you've got Musk in the one hand saying we're going to have to be really careful because I guess a bit like Bill Gates and others, they think that there's a real danger and a real risk that if we don't control it and we don't get the balance right, put in the right measures, controls, then it could present us with a problem in years to come. Whereas others are saying we're going to fully embrace it now. Let's see where it goes, and then we'll handle it as we go along. So there's going to be a balance somewhere that as we learn new things, there's going to be a point where we do have to put controls in. Is it now? My own personal opinion is no. We do need to be aware of them without a doubt. But I think we've got to allow certain experimentation to take place with some of these new technologies. And I use that word experimentation specifically because if you look back now, five, probably even 5 years ago, I was going to say 5 or 10 years ago, but certainly 5 years ago, the word experimentation, as far as technology was concerned, was a really dirty word. You know, it was enterprises didn't want to experiment. They were very risk averse. They were very careful about where their funding went. And nowadays, experimentation is a great thing to do. You know, it's like experiment fast, fail fast, and then you'll learn from it for the next one. And so I think, you know, there's a whole industry built up by the fact that experimentation in the emerging tech world is now a good thing to have. That's why I think you're getting this massive number of emerging tech companies where we know it's going to play some role. It's great to experiment. And then you've got all these intermediaries helping these emerging tech companies like VCs, this crowdfunding, you know, various things going on, clubs, investments, even governments are putting money into that and encouraging experimentation, which I think is great. And then we'll see what emerges. You know, some of them will land, many of them won't. But I think that we'll learn along the way. And as we do, that's when, you know, we'll find the right time to then put these check and balances in. Just to follow on that, Andy, you mentioned something there about remote working and how things are changing. Over the last, I think, 3, 4 years, I've worked with a couple of organizations, very large financial services organizations, who up until fairly recently had always then said to their employees, come into the office. You must check in, not quite really checking in with a card or a clocking in, but they had to come in. That was the way that all the processes, the policies, the management, the governance, everything was set up. And then they realized as they grew that they couldn't keep inviting people in because that means we need another office, we need another floor, we need to be expanding. And that's costly. So those organizations, and certainly the two that I've been working with, were looking for different ways to encourage their workers to work more remotely. And again, it wasn't just about the technology, because we know that already exists today. This was more about finding a way that people could work remotely and be trusted. Because the way the model was set up, they were coming in, and that was the way that the company actually trusted its employees to do the work and be productive, because they could see them 9 to 5. And now they've got a new model being put in place where they don't see them. And then you've got to build up a new level of trust, a new level of ways of working. So it's all change, and it's happening gradually. Some are faster than others, but it nonetheless it's happening quite fast anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and I've been swayed both ways. I think, well, specifically talking about how people are best suited to work, and it boils down to a people problem above all else. And I think that the friction that you have with things like this is the unpredictability of people and how they're going to behave in different environments. And I think that at the moment, it's standard practice to do the Henry Ford way, which is the 9 to 5, right? And I think that that will eventually get disrupted, but at the same time, it's kind of like the first iPhone at the moment with this regard. It's like it's a great idea, but it's not 100% working great. So let's kind of wait for 2.0 to come around. And I think we're kind of all the way there with a lot of the technology, but what I actually think is that we're at an interesting point of inflection where it's kind of technology and people, and that's where we have a little bit of a lag at the moment. Is that the way that people are behaving with each other while kind of using this technology to better operate externally from an internal perspective, as a business, I don't think that the kind of the people management side of things has necessarily caught up because, for instance, you have HR, whatever, that will be kind of trained and set in practices in a certain way that's built in for people who are in the office 9 to 5, and those practices will have stood for ages to get the most out of people, the people development guys, whoever the case may be, that they essentially train for that 9 to 5. But now you have something where it's open to kind of disruptive tendencies, which is not having people be in brick and mortar anymore. As you stated, it's very expensive. It's getting more expensive. It's already expensive to manufacture in this country, keep people in office. So it's all this kind of thing. It doesn't necessarily make sense logistically anymore to continue to do that. So I do think that there's a huge lag there on the people side of things. And I think there typically is, to be honest, in general with technology. I suppose I'd be curious to see if there's been much of a take up on that side of things. I suppose when you're consulting with people, I do want to ask a little bit about that in future, but how much people consider that as sort of an aspect of improving fundamentals, why they would hire an organization like yours to go in. And improve efficiencies and such things like that. I think that it is an overlooked aspect of it, and I think that we do need to kind of start considering this now because technology's there. We have to kind of let it work for us. But from a people to people's perspective, we also there's as much adapting to be done there, if not more.
No, yeah, you're bang on, Andy. I mean, I think that, technology, it doesn't matter what technology. I mean, over the years, I've implemented many different types of technology. I mean, my background way back was in ERP, with Oracle, SAP, and we were implementing big core systems into organizations to improve their, you know, it could be finance, their manufacturing processes, whatever. But it was all about reducing costs significantly and giving more control to the enterprise. And at the time, we used to talk an awful lot that it's about the people, because you're going to be changing roles, you're going to be changing the task, you're going to be changing the way that people interact with each other. However, that was a change in the way people worked in that specific office. And the change in the last 10 years has been about technologies that now allow different types of relationships. It allows organizations, allows people to now work where they, you know, they don't even meet. We're using technologies to collaborate a lot better than we used to. And today that's evolved itself into these things like, you know, we talk about the gig economy. We talk about something called frictionless economy, where although humans and human capital is still critical, but today it's much more about jobs, you know, drawing on people rather than people drawing on jobs. And I guess what I mean by that is people today, you can see it from the way, particularly the younger generation, they care now more about what they work on and who they work with rather than, you know, who they work for. And I guess that's this new economy and the way people work. There's a lot more ethical questions being asked by people before they say, I want to work for this company. They want to understand the CSR or the ethics policy of that company before they join. They want to see exactly what kind of projects, what challenges they'll have. Is that organization a collegiate one? Does it allow for creativity? Does it allow for things like extended holidays where they may want to go off into a third world country to, you know, to do something there over a summer period, like 12 weeks or whatever, you know, take a break. They want to understand all these things now. It's no longer just a case of, I want a job, what's the money, and I'll come and work for you. A lot more questions are being asked by people. So I think that we're absolutely, the technology's there. We know that it's all happening. It's just really a question of the investment, how much we want to accelerate these things. There is still a need for return on investment. Absolutely. Every enterprise is going to make money. It's going to be competitive. And I think this is where the emerging tech industry comes in, because they're now putting technologies out there that the bigger enterprises, the bigger corporates want to see. They quite often don't innovate themselves. They don't have their own emerging tech companies. They tend to really look at the emerging tech world, the ecosystem, what's out there. And quite often they'll use intermediaries. I mean, there's a lot of these organizations out there today that help join up corporates and startups to see if they can get an acceleration of the new tech to make that enterprise more competitive. There's companies like, recently in London, one opened up from the US called Rocket Space. They're kind of a technology accelerator that takes startup companies who have probably got some kind of minimum viable product. You know, there's something there that's tangible, and introduce it to the corporates to say, this is something we think is of interest to you. And those corporates pay for the privilege of working with people like Rocket Space to get that opportunity to work with the emerging companies. There's others out there, you know, Google are doing it. They've got something called Sidewalk Labs. Government are doing it, obviously. You know, I mean, Mayor Sadiq Khan in London, for example, what he's trying to do is to find and tap into that talent pool that isn't always obvious. So there's a lot of emphasis going on upskilling. And this is all designed really at the end of the day to try and generate a lot more technology that brings in more business, that generates and brings in more talent. And that's why smart cities, you know, it's quite a critical area for any global city now. A lot of major investments going into cities by the large tech companies, the Googles, the Intels, the Ciscos, those kind of people. London's no exception. A lot of investment going there. And it's still regarded as the top startup city in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. I also have a question to ask on that. Mm. The this desire that corporates have at the moment, and I have noticed it. Myself actually, I get like messages, you know, on LinkedIn and such from people from these. I hear this like GLG company that kind of connects you with, you know, the kind of corporates to pick your brains. Like, because I'm from a startup background, right?
Yeah,
I've had like a little bit of that, and obviously know people that have, you know, had contact from them, and you know, similar projects to the one you were explaining earlier. But do you think that there's the risk there ever? And I've spoken to people in technology as well that, you know, I struggle with this as well. But do you think there's that kind of balance between and there is potential risk there for corporates to kind of get lost in this kind of new and sexy and kind of tech scene and kind of lose sight a little bit of essentially the bottom line? Or are they so kind of bottom line focused that this kind of frees it up a little bit? But I suppose, you know, just is there a risk there that that's going to happen? Because there's so much technology and it's moving so quickly at the moment. It's not all necessary to get the job done at the end of the day. And there's definitely a problem within technical people and the technical community when they're looking from a hiring manager's perspective to bring on other technical people, to get people on board who are not focused on the vision and the bottom line as much as they're focused on, like, just want to work on the latest and greatest and like technology and don't really have like clarity on what they're working towards. So that's kind of the risk from their perspective. But do you ever think that that's something to consider on the corporate side, and they could get lost in that, and that could actually cause them problems if they focus too many resources on this kind of new tech collaborations?
It's a good challenge, that one. And I think that, you know, the way I would answer that is that it does depend on the sector you're in. It, you know, retailers, we know, are spending huge amounts on new technology to understand the consumer behavior, accessing a lot of marketing data, to be able to then offer more almost instant kind of discounts. I mean, the whole idea, for example, is if in the future, and it's happening today in some airports, but if you're walking through an airport, the idea that the retail shops want to then do is that as you're passing, your phone, which will then be open to push discounting from the store you're passing, says that we noticed that you're in the airport just now, 25% off this particular perfume if you buy in the next 15, 20 minutes. And then you're guided to that particular shop. They're after all those kind of technologies, and that retail's been one of the major drivers in the new tech world. But if you're a manufacturer and a supplier, you know, of some kind of goods that is being supplied, you still want access to new technology, because any major organization, well, in fact, any organization, wants to be competitive. They ideally want to grow, because otherwise you might just be in a survival mode. So they're constantly looking for how can technology help me not only become more efficient, more effective, but at the same time offer the services that I have much more cost effectively. So they're looking to reduce their costs. So they've done things like get rid of the assets, reduce CapEx funding, move to the OpEx. This is why the as a service world is so attractive, because it allows you to do this floating up and down. It's why AWS, people like that, have been really successful, because they've marketed what they sell, the services they sell, as a, you can switch it off at any time. You can scale up, you can scale down. And whether you do or whether you don't, the idea that you can do that kind of scaling up and down is quite attractive for a lot of organizations who have got maybe seasonal loads. They may not necessarily want a peak all year round, not one peak in the season. So that becomes attractive for a lot of organizations. And I think also the world of budgets has probably changed. The world of budgeting, where previously it was all about, we'll invest this amount of money, look at the CapEx, look at the depreciation, what's the return on the investment, all those kind of good things. They did pilots, but they were very risk averse. They now have to be more competitive. The budgets have to be more flexible. They do have to look at innovation, but rather than doing a significant CapEx innovation, such as building your own innovation lab, you'll probably then bring in the service from other suppliers or other intermediaries. I mentioned RocketSpace. Google was another one in the US that I've worked with called Galvanize. All those companies have set themselves up to be that intermediary for corporates to then pay a service charge to get access to some of these latest emerging tech companies and some of the latest capabilities and talent in the market as well. So it is a changing world. And that's why, as I say, experimentation, the fail fast, as it were, so that you can learn, is something that's much more attractive to corporates these days.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, lean kind of agile methodology is, I think it's just, well, maybe not in everyone's world, but certainly sort of for the last few years, it's kind of been almost expected, I suppose, from the people that I sort of associate with. The fail fast, you know, lean methodology, agile methodology is kind of a must. And I think that something that, you know, corporations have realized is doable as well. And that's, it's so cost effective as well. I mean, sinking huge amounts of budget into kind of untested projects is kind of a laughable kind of way of doing things, I suppose, now. Certainly from a startup perspective. But aside from that, you know, obviously with you guys, you work with a ton of clients over the years. Now, based on the kind of the conversation we've had about the technologies, what kind of points of friction do you still kind of see, or I suppose most frequently see from clients now on regarding the kind of technologies when you're going in, you know, you're working closely with them? What are some of the things that I suppose that they expect or they think is the kind of the right way to do things, but necessarily, but sometimes isn't necessarily the right way to do things? Is there kind of commonalities there, or commonalities in their approach that, you know, you consistently see that, you know, these corporations are potentially going wrong about?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. And there's always one that does emerge where you go into a lot of enterprises and companies that talk about, we want to transform. We want a business transformation. We want to reduce the cost of this, and we'll be investing this in the new technology. And that's great. And we'll put in place the plans to implement those. But the one thing that always, it's always a difficult thing to grasp is how much effort it actually takes off the company itself, how much sponsorship, how much communications they need. Because to get the buy-in and change in the organization, and you said it earlier, Andy, we can put the technology in and you can lead people up to the technology to use it, that will they use it in the right way that is going to make the change that was in the original business case? And there's a lot of instances and a lot of cases that you can read about on the web, on the internet, and various, like Harvard Business Review, they've got many, many of them, where the organization failed to deliver the change and the transformation, not because of the technology, but they just failed to grasp the level of involvement and engagement that was needed by them to make it actually happen. That's one. And then the other one is typically that if, as part of the original business case, to put the new technology in order to also get the cost reduction, quite often it would mean headcount reduction. But they'll often back away from that because they recognize that culturally they may not have been an organization that has got a history or got a culture to lay off the headcount or to reduce that headcount. So they back off from that and they try to then muddle their way through it. So it's a bit like being half pregnant. You know, you're neither one nor the other. And they don't quite really get the benefits and the value that they always anticipated. And quite often these programs then get declared as a failure. And it's not often because of the technology or the implementation of it. It's the adoption and the level of change that's required. So we do see that quite a lot.
That is so fascinating. And it's like, that's so embedded into, I think, people from my world's perception of corporate. That is like the perception of it is the reluctancy to change. That is like when I look at it, that is what I think about. like legitimately. And so it's fascinating that that's something that, that you come across. And then it's like the they kind of go along with it to kind of almost tick boxes, but then the commitment's not there to actually make the change happen.
Well, I think a lot of it, Andy, is because it may be it's not understood at the beginning, because those level of changes we're talking about, it's hard. It's not easy. You know, they're very complex. And to think that the, somehow the technology will deliver the benefits and value is misplaced views. And I think that when you realize that these things are complex, and I guess a good test is a question we often get asked by clients when we're talking about looking for team members from them to join the change team. They'll often ask us, you know, what's the skills and what's the capabilities and experience you need from us? And we'll often say things like, well, if it's not a person that you're really going to miss an awful lot in your organization by giving us to them and to the team, then it's not the right person. So in other words, we want the best people to put in place this level of change. Because if we don't get the best people, the people that are respected, experienced in that company, know how it works, know how to change things, if you don't get those individuals onto the change team, you've probably not got the right team members.
Is that frustrating as well to have that kind of resilience? Because I'm sure even though that's advised, it's not always necessarily the way it plays out, right?
No, it's not. I mean, quite often, you know, you're able to adapt and you do end up, quite, I mean, most of the time, you do end up getting very, very good people joining the team. Whether they're often all the right people, well, time will tell. Because, you know, as you go in as a supplier into an organization doing a big business transformation, you don't really know the people, and you have to trust the people that are being put in front of you to join your team. And then more often than not, it does work. But, you know, there's times where we do have to change the team, both on the supplier side, I might add, and also on the company side. But getting the right engagement, getting the team gelling together, understanding what it really takes, because as I said, they're really hard, these transformations. They're not easy things. I mean, let's face it, if they were easy, everyone would do them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's like you say, it's naivety in a way to not fully understand what you're actually trying to take on. I think that's maybe where the shortcomings are. And as you say, I think I tend to massively agree with you. And it almost kind of brings it in full circle to, you know, what we were discussing earlier about, you know, the kind of the remote work, the people, the lack of the focus on the people. It's still a people problem at the end of the day, isn't it? It's not necessarily a technology problem. It's just how do we kind of coordinate and sync the two together. And I do think that that is a common theme amongst all industry and size of company at the moment, that I think it's just not been caught up. And I think anyone who wants to consult on that, maybe you've got an opportunity there.
No, you're right. The people side is without doubt one of the most critical. And I think that's why I've recently joined and providing some time to a company called Tin Smart Social, which is a UK-based company looking at upskilling, let's just call them challenged individuals. And it's what some of the councils are doing, some of the government bodies are doing. They're all focusing on how do we get access to the talent that doesn't come through the traditional routes like the universities, where you know you interview them because they've got a 2-1 and you think, well, they're the guys for us. There's a whole set of talent out there in communities that for one reason or another, they're not able to go on to further education. They don't get exposure to any training programs. So working with organizations like Tin Smart Social and others, there's many, many organizations out there, it's about how do we now tap into that talent pool, because we know the intelligence level is there, the base capability is there. We just need to find it and then upskill them to be able to then work in the new digital technology companies. And you're trying to find people a lot of the time, not with the qualifications, it's people with the right aptitude, the right personalities, because, you know, if they have that, you can train them, to do the right job, but if they don't have these aptitudes, the right personality, the right characteristics, then that's harder to train. So there's a lot of emphasis now, as I say, particularly in the local governments and other bodies working around local governments, to tap into those talent pools, because we're not finding enough digital talents and skills coming out of the universities and colleges.
Yeah, I think that's so accurate. I genuinely couldn't agree more. I'm glad you said that. It kind of reassured me. I've actually just hired a couple of guys myself, and I based it much more off the personality traits and characteristics rather than out of university degrees and such. So I think there's a space there. But I mean, I've actually talked about it on the show a little bit just in general, but I feel quite strongly and would love to see it happen, but I think the whole education system in general is just dying to be disrupted. That's been my kind of theory on things the last couple of years. I wish I kind of was, I suppose, smart enough to figure that one out about how to go about this, but I think that's the next big thing to be disrupted. I don't think there's any question. I mean, you can't get away with continuously increasing prices for something that the value is just being decreased at a rapid rate year over year. So, I mean, the economics don't really add up for that anymore. I think it's so true. And I think people are already doing it. But I do think that, again, as you say, there's still a responsibility there from the organizational standpoint to understand that, you know, people aren't looking at the traditional route, especially technical people now. They're kind of leading the way, and a lot of them aren't bothering with the university. They don't have the courses. They don't have the that they need to kind of learn the skills that they want to. They can just go and learn them on their own now. So does that mean that he's not the man for the job because he didn't go to Oxford and doesn't have a 2-1, as you said? You know, it's a system that I feel quite strongly about, and I think it's in dire need of disrupting, certainly in our country anyway.
Well, I you're right, and I think that maybe the large organisations, they've been, you know, just kind of swimming around the outside lanes looking at that talent pool inside, and I think that they're beginning to realise that, as you say, Andy, that the talent they're now after doesn't necessarily come from the traditional routes. So finding where it can come from, a lot of organizations are trying to just look around and work with others. There's a lot of collaboration going on with local councils, as I say. There's a lot of intermediaries that are helping corporates find that talent because they're not finding it through the traditional route. It's why also, you know, if you look back just a few years, there was a revitalization around apprenticeships. Because then if you can find the right 16-year-old with the right characteristics and the foundation, the building blocks, you can then train them to do the right kind of jobs. And there's been a lot of focus on apprenticeships over the last few years. I think the one thing we're still missing is that it's not necessarily an integrated policy. A lot of it is still quite transactional. And I think that hopefully over the next 3, 4, 5 years and more, we'll start to integrate these programs a little bit better to get access to that talent, train them, make them available, whether it's a startup company, small company, large corporate, whatever. But it becomes probably more acceptable and more mainstream in a few years' time. It still is early days. We've had apprenticeships. That's worked in some cases, but not in all cases. We're now looking at a lot of these, as we say, the upskilling programs to tap into talent that has almost been it's the iceberg that's under the sea level. And so we know we're at the tip, just above sea level at the moment, but we've got to tap into the bigger pool because they're there. Those individuals, those people are there in the communities. And if we can reach out to those communities and get the right mentoring, the right relationships, and in some cases, build up those individuals' confidence, they could go on to do some great things.
I agree. I agree massively. David, I could have talked to you all day, but I know it's 40 minutes in on a Monday, so I appreciate having that much of your time. I hope we can do it again soon. I think there's so much more to discuss. So thank you first and foremost for coming on the show. Really enjoyed it. I hope you didn't find it too painful.
No, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks very much, Andy, and I'm sure we will speak again.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.